Hello all and welcome to episode number 13 of Nerds Talk Movies, the nerdstash.com's podcast for all things movies and TV. I'm your host, Johnny Reynolds, and joining me, as always, is Taylor Cole. Taylor, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm not really looking forward to us talking about this serious, really crappy story.
Yeah, I am not either. It's very, very unfortunate. Before we do get into that, I do have the standard bit of housekeeping that I have to go over. So remember to check us out on Twitter at Nerdstash Show, which is good for this podcast, as well as our video game one. Please come hang out with us on Discord at the Nerdstash community. Check out our website, thenerdstash.com, for daily news, reviews, and opinion pieces on all kinds of content. And please subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform of your choice. So we've got a little bit of a different order for the show today. Normally, we'd talk about what we've been watching this week. But as our story of the week is rather serious, we thought we'd talk about that before we shift into the more lighthearted stuff. So you have probably heard this by now, but if not, Black Panther star Chadwick Boseman has passed away at the age of 43 due to his secret but long-running battle with colon cancer. Now, while details on it are sort of scarce at the time of this recording, we know that he kept it private. Only people closest to him knew. He was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer in 2016 and battled with it for the last 4 years and as it progressed to stage 4. So that means that he filmed many projects, including all of his MCU roles, while battling cancer, which is seriously impressive and one hell of a feat. And his fellow MCU co-stars and others have been sharing their stories about Boseman. Before we share our own reaction to the sad news, we just wanted to express our condolences to Boseman's family. This is obviously heartbreaking. Chadwick Boseman was more than just an actor. He was an inspiration to a lot of people, especially Black viewers who, you know, didn't grow up like us, you know, seeing themselves portrayed on the big screen in superhero roles. And a lot of the stories that I've been seeing shared today were about what that meant to them, which has been really beautiful and touching that at least that has come out of this tragedy. But he's also, it isn't just Black Panther. He's portrayed just incredible Black figures on
Jackie
the big
Robinson.
Screen, like Jackie Robinson, Thurgood Marshall, James Brown. Like he was a real inspiration, and he wanted his career to sort of praise inspirational figures in the Black community as well as portray Black characters the way that, you know, Hollywood hasn't really represented them that way in the past. I've just been reading stories about this all day, about people who were touched and inspired by him and what he meant to them, and this is just completely shocking. That he kept it secret and that he was able to film all of these movies while battling that at the same time. One of the most touching stories that I saw was reshared. You see, like, actors who are in superhero roles, they go visit sick children in the hospital, and just to know that he did that, he went to go visit terminally ill children while battling cancer himself, was just really remarkable to me.
Yeah, man. I gotta say, like, sometimes, like, celebrity deaths, like, it happens a lot. This one, to me, it usually doesn't, but it kind of hit me in the gut. It really did.
Oh, yeah.
Not just from me having my own family members go through cancer and seeing it happen to somebody else, and it just so... I'm trying not to curse here, but so crappy of a disease and just terribleness. What gets me, though, is just the suddenness of it. Mm-hmm. Like, we know all these things about these celebrities. Way too much. And just like, oh no, he had this for 4 years. He was doing all these movies while he was on it. He was going to these, going to hospitals, visiting kids, losing weight from movies, gaining weight from movies. Like, that is so impressive, man. And what he means to to me, I'm just a dumb white dude who talks into a mic twice a week and talk games, movies,
oh, yeah.
TV shows.
We both are, yeah.
I can't tell you Black Panther to me is anything other than a great movie. I just can't. I think everything outside the action in that movie is fantastic. But for other people, kind of like Christopher Reeve, his Superman had in a previous generation, Boseman's, like T'Challa, had a monumental impact on a lot of other people in this world today. There are kids out there who's like, that superhero looks just like me. And you add in the fact, just like I said, he had in all those movies battling cancer, visited kids in hospitals. I mean, dude, that's just so freaking impressive.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible the amount of strength that must have taken and to keep it secret that entire time.
In my opinion, too, people are talking about like what he's leaving behind. I think that's the legacy Chadwick Boseman's leaving behind, and I'll be damned if that's not a great one.
Oh, yeah.
That is really impressive. I know acting, that's just so good. The fact that he was doing all that.
Yeah, and like you said, he bulked up for Black Panther, and then he slimmed down to film Marshall, and then he bulked back up again for Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, and while he was, you know, being treated for colon cancer, and that's just powerful.
Yeah,
like,
it really is.
I don't know, I can't imagine the type of strength that would take for a person to be able to do that.
I
think he knew what he meant to a lot of people.
Yeah.
To see themselves represented on the screen.
I remember him saying at some point, I believe he was like, everybody keeps saying Wakanda Forever to me. And like he said it like, it's a little annoying. You do kind of got to thank somebody who was doing that deep down. They're like, nah, I know what this means for people. So
yeah,
it's good. So personally, like, I don't go to these conventions, but like you said, just hearing these outpour for people, like, I've never met, talked to Boseman or whatever. I don't go to those conventions, but yeah, everything I've heard about this guy seems like a genuinely good person. 2020, man, I don't think that's easy to come by.
No, it is definitely very hard to come by.
I mean, dude, the internet right now is really on the same page, just sharing love for this guy. That doesn't happen. The internet's just a mean place. And for it to be kind of like this place right now, to where people are like, hey, this is what this dude was. This is what he meant to me. This is what this movie meant for me. This is how cool we got. That's really awesome to see.
Yeah, it really is. And a lot of people are sharing, like, videos from when Black Panther premiered, and not videos from the movie necessarily, but videos from like premieres at different theaters. And there was this one really great clip on Jimmy Fallon's show where they had black viewers come in and sort of like, I guess, say what the movie meant for them to see black people represented so powerfully on the big screen. But they didn't know that that Chadwick Boseman was like hiding somewhere, so he would pop out after they give their little speech and just surprise them. And just like the joy that that was just on their faces, the joy and surprise and the love that he brought to them and to a lot of people. It was just really touching to see.
Yeah, I mean, just also from just a professional standpoint too. Like, yeah, I think Boseman was honestly an actor who I thought legitimately got better and better every movie.
Yeah.
Like, we saw him be, I don't know if you're not really that much of a sports fan, but I remember seeing him in Draft Day, and he was kind of the heart of the movie. And then he got to be a badass in Captain America Civil War, and then he just tore up screen time in Black Panther with Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
So you just see that kind of like progress, and he's getting better and better. And one that sticks out to me is one where T'Challa is just going off on his ancestors. And it's like, you were wrong to turn your back on him and all this. That just so powerful of a scene. And dude just had so much potential, man. And I kind of think we're just scratching the surface with it.
Yeah, I agree. I remember going with my mom actually to see Get On Up, which is the James Brown movie that he starred in. And I think that was right around the time where it got announced that he was going to be Black Panther. And I, at that point, I wasn't, I wasn't reading comics at that point, so I didn't know a whole lot about the character.
Yeah.
But I just seeing him like crush it, absolutely nail it as James Brown and get on up, I was like, I can't wait to see what he does in a superhero role. And he as we know, he absolutely nailed it. And yeah. I know what you mean. It just seems like he was just getting started. Like it seems like this was just the beginning of a really prolific career that was just cut too short.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I think that legacy he's leaving behind of him making that impact on people and going, hey, I also did all this while fighting cancer and I went to go see these kids and all that. Man, that's just, I really can't get over it. I know we mentioned it three times, but
yeah,
I can't imagine like me being in that situation and being like, yeah, I'll do this and go lose weight for this movie and gain weight for this movie. And that's so much like determination that I'm not sure a lot of people have.
No, I know I wouldn't have that type of determination. If I found out that I was diagnosed with any kind of cancer, I would be like, okay, well, this is my life now. This is what I have to focus on. But he was clearly a different breed. It's incredible.
You want to try
I don't really know how to end that segment. It's just really, really awful. And I know he's been sorely missed by a lot of people right now.
Yeah, we don't talk about these stories kind of much on Nerd Stop Movies or the Nerd Stash Show. I think with this show, that's going to change a little bit. Because I used to see it as like, hey, let's have some entertainment. People just want to listen to us, hear our dumb takes on movies and TV shows and whatever. But I kind of do think, okay, let's talk about Chadwick Boseman or Robin Williams or anybody who passes. And it kind of gives them a shining a light on it. And like, hey, here's what these people did. And
that's what they meant to everyone.
That's what I think, at least on this show, we might need to start doing a little bit.
Yeah. No, we can definitely do that. But let's try and shift gears, though, from the terrible news and hopefully deliver a pretty entertaining show for you guys listening. And we will try to get into our What Are We Watching segment with the rest of the show. So, Taylor, why don't you start us off? What have you been watching this week?
I have been watching two things. Both superhero shows. The Boys, Season 1. We have a spoiler talk planned for Season 2, the first three episodes. Johnny has seen it, I have not. So I've been binging it. I binged it all in 2 days. Nice. I really, really, really like this show. And I don't say love it because it was so hyped up as like the best thing ever. And when I got it done, I was like, it was really, really good. But it wasn't the best thing I've ever seen. You know what I mean? Like, the expectation was a little too high.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
The Seven were absolutely hilarious. I love the way it's kind of just a realistic take of what superheroes would be. And I was seeing complaints of like, oh, not everyone will be evil. It's not every one of these superheroes are evil. Like, characters like Maeve and...
Yeah, Maeve's not completely evil. Like,
she's doing terrible things. But it's more of, over the years, she's just been broken down.
Yeah.
And Starlight, she's not evil at all. Like, she's the exact opposite. Honestly, there is that thing of, if she stays with the Seven, does she become Maeve? It's kind of like looking into the future.
Yeah, that's kind of how I saw Maeve, is that when she joined, she was... I mean, I haven't read the comics either, so I don't even know if this is true at all. I thought of her as, like, she at once was in Starlight's position, where she was just like shiny eyed and like eager to help people, and it just over the years just like wore her down, you know, being like owned and by the government and being forced to being told to who to help and what to do and all of that.
Yeah,
that's how I thought of Maeve.
The Deep, another character, he starts out so horribly. I mean, so horribly. I mean, you just want him to die, pretty much. You hate his powers. You hate what he does. He looks like a discount Aquaman. But by the end of the season, I really start to think, like, you just seen Game of Thrones, and I was like, are they going to do a Theon like redemption story here? Like, because
oh yeah,
there is a care for helping people and animals and all that. There, there's just kind of an asshole. that's his personality.
Yeah, no, you're not
He's
wrong.
Got to get past that and being so scummy and doing these terrible things. And that's where the show is really interesting, especially Homelander 2. I mentioned it. I tweeted it out. I was like, Anthony Starr has got to be cast as Reverse Flash immediately.
I saw you tweet that out, and I was like, wow, that is actually really good casting. Yeah.
He is such a good actor, when it's especially going to, oh, Superman kind of character. Yeah, laughing, smiling. Then on a dime, he'll flip and just be the worst person on the planet. And
yeah, the scene, where he and Maeve go to rescue that plane is, like, chilling.
That's probably one of my favorite scenes of any TV show. But where the show kind of falls a little bit for me, and this is why it's not, like, one of the best I've seen yet, is the boys themselves. I don't find them as interesting.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
Billy Butcher, I thought he'd be a little more compelling or complex. He kind of really one-note revenge. Huey is all right.
To I me, like Frenchie.
Frenchie is actually probably the best.
Yeah,
being
he is.
Complex, probably the best person out of the group as well. You know, he's done terrible things, but you can tell deep down, like, he doesn't want to kill the female, and he keeps trying to be the better person. So, that's what I'm hoping season 2 does, is puts better focus on the boys.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll find out very soon. But the other thing that you've been watching is, like, the exact opposite type of superhero.
Yeah, so. I needed that. So, I've been watching Smallville on Hulu. And this show is very good in some moments, very bad in others. Tom Welling is great as Superman here. It reminds me a little bit of how The Flash is when it first starts. I remember when the Flash came out, people were like, man, it's just like Smallville. And I can see why now. It's just a really fun show. Lex Luthor's relationship with Clark is really good. But I will say this. The show is very dated when it comes to its music choices, the way story is, all that stuff.
Yeah, I haven't seen it since it was, like, on TV. So I'm sure it's pretty dated.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say on Smallville is Tom Welling did appear on Crisis on Infinite Earths, and it kind of did. He got a mixed reaction due to his ending. Because it's basically like a Smallville epilogue. And some people loved it, some people hated it. I gotta say, a few episodes into season 1, it is the perfect ending for Clark Kent.
Interesting. But
what are you watching, Johnny?
Well, I feel like I've had the same answer for, like, the past 5 episodes. Which is Vikings. which is Vikings. I'm still working my way through Vikings, but I am almost done. I'm on the final season on Hulu, which I think I said last week. They gave the last 3 seasons 20 episodes instead of 10, like the earlier seasons, but they've just been taking mid-season breaks. So the first half of season 6 is on Hulu. I've got about 5 more episodes left of that, and then I'll be completely caught up. The second half of season 6 is still supposed to come out sometime this year. They haven't given a definitive date. I know that there was a trailer released at Comic-Con at home. I haven't watched it yet because I don't want to get spoiled on anything. But I'm almost caught up. I have been jumping back into Shameless as well because they recently put the newest season on Netflix. And Shameless is a show that I'm just continuing to watch because I've already watched this far anyway. I mean, it's still good. It's not a bad show by any means.
That is one hell of a review right
It's just gone on for, I think, too long. And it's based on a British show that went on for, like, 11 seasons, too. And this is the 10th season now. I think they actually recently announced that the final season of Shameless will be next year, and that'll be wrapping up, which I think is good. The main actress left in the 9th season, and it sort of feels like she was the glue, sort of like holding this dysfunctional family together. So the show feels, I think, a little bit aimless without her. Still good, still entertaining, but it's not a show that I would recommend someone start right now because there are 10 seasons. Like, that's just so much time to invest.
Yeah.
But I'm already this far, and I still do enjoy the characters, so I am sticking with it. It's still pretty good. It's just far from the show that it once was. And it was very, very good for a very long time, so, you know.
Yeah, I might get into Shameless. I think it's on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I know I'll be getting into Vikings. I have a few reviews set up, but after I'm done with those, I'm going to go right into Vikings.
Oh, yeah. Because Vikings is very interesting.
Everybody keeps saying it's a pretty show.
Yeah. Oh, and you'll be happy to know that Hulu started recommending me Black Sails because I've been watching so much Vikings.
It's a slow burn.
Yeah.
Once you get to season two, it's going to just go. It's kind of like Game of Thrones went.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe I'll get into that. But I also want to watch Harley Quinn since that just got recently added to HBO Max. But that's only two seasons, and I think I can finish that up pretty quickly.
That's worth it, too.
Yeah. I have heard only amazing things about that. I've heard it's hilarious. But anyway, let's move on to our news. Bit of a light schedule here for our news this week. But finally, against all odds, New Mutants is finally here. And Taylor, it's not looking too well. It's not reviewing that well with critics or the general audiences. Right now on Rotten Tomatoes, with critics, it's sitting at a 29% and with an audience score of 53%. So we aren't going to go in too much into what everyone is saying, but we do have a little review roundup here. We've got two or three snippets from reviews around the internet. So Forbes's Scott Mendelson said, putting aside the circumstances of its release, both in terms of being delayed for over 2 years, mostly due to shenanigans related to Disney DIS plus 1.4% buying Fox in mid-2019, and being the first major studio release dropped into nationwide theatrical release after months of pandemic-related theater closures, The New Mutants is a miserable motion picture. It's a monotonous, redundant, and irrelevant fantasy flick that fails to commit to being a teen melodrama, a YA fantasy, or a horror movie, instead offering half-assed components of all three. Despite a strong cast, the all-too-rare presence of an LGBTQIA romance between two lead characters, and a few moments of visual inventiveness, Josh Boone and Nate Lee's The New Mutants boils down to being, yes, a terrible feature-length prequel for a sequel that absolutely no one will ever want to see. Oof, that is rough. CinemaBlend's Sean O'Connell gave the score.
That's pretty bad. I can't get over that. There's so many words just saying that this movie sucks.
A lot of bad adjectives in there. Then we have CinemaBlend's Sean O'Connell, who gave the score 1.5 out of 5 stars, saying, in the end, The New Mutants disappoints. It finds the right actors to play these intriguing Marvel mutants, but traps them in a simplistic, unimaginative, low-budget blip on the comic book radar that neither hinders nor furthers the superhero conversation. I'm starting to forget it. You probably should, too. God. And while most reviews have either been mixed or largely negative, not every review has panned New Mutants because, as I said, it's sitting at a 29%, which I am not sure if that's lower than Dark Phoenix or not. I'll have to look that up. But IGN's Jim Vajvoda gave the movie a 7 out of 10, saying the New Mutants didn't deserve to be locked away for years. It's not some unwatchable mess, but rather a perfectly fine, entertaining, if at times formulaic, small-scale genre movie. The solid young cast makes their troubled protagonists appealing and identifiable, more distinctly drawn than some of the supporting characters in past X-Men movies have been. While the first half is fairly by the numbers, things get weirder and more entertaining in the second half. The New Mutants had already earned its place as a curious footnote in Fox's now-defunct X-Men franchise, but it's a stronger, better movie than such diminished expectations from its long-delayed release would suggest. So, that's not great news. We've been waiting for this movie for a long time. But at least, even in the worst reviews that we've been seeing, the cast is at least getting some credit. They're doing what they can with the material that they're given. Taylor, are you still excited to see The New Mutants?
a lot less, to be honest.
Right.
See, the thing is, too, is with these two review roundups, kind of behind the scenes here, I didn't want to get too many of them, so there are some more positive ones out there. There are some more negative ones out there. They're probably worse ones than the ones we've read. I just wanted to get two or three ones out there so we can kind of talk about the general consensus around the movie.
Yeah.
But those words do not really give me much confidence to go see it, and that's why I'm really stumbling as much as I am. Because I wanted this movie to be so good. Because of all the issues around it, I wanted it to be this thing where it was like, nah, screw you guys, we still had a good movie. What are you guys going to do with these characters? Because I find that so interesting. Instead, it seems like, oh no, this thing is very, very forgettable. You can put it up there with Dark Phoenix. You're just going to forget it.
Yeah. And like I said, the audience score is at 53%, so audience members are enjoying it a little bit more than the critics, which sometimes tends to happen with superhero movies. But I'm right there with you. I wanted this movie to succeed so badly. It's just unfortunate that it's kind of not. I'm still interested in seeing it. I really like Maisie Williams. Arya was my favorite character on Game of Thrones. I like Anya Taylor-Joy a lot. She plays magic. And it sounds like the cast is still doing an okay job. Also, Dark Phoenix is sitting at a 22, so it's just sitting above it. I just looked that up.
So that's something.
So that's something. It could always be worse. Things can always be worse.
I'm not sure what else it could be. But this is not great at all, especially when we get to the controversy.
Let's go ahead and get into that. So if the reviews weren't putting you off from seeing New Mutants, the controversy surrounding it might do that job. So the co-creator of the New Mutants, Bob McLeod, I had to look up how to pronounce that, has slammed the recent adaptation for the way it portrays his characters. So the artist took to his personal Facebook account to express his disappointment. He said, quote, "I was very excited when I heard they were making a New Mutants movie. I thought making it into a horror movie was perhaps an interesting idea, but not at all how the character should be introduced to the public at large. But hey, my character's in a movie. I never would have thought that would actually happen. But then, I was disappointed when they didn't give Danny braids, although I like Blue Hunt. I was disappointed when Rain wasn't a redhead with spiky hair, although I adore Maisie Williams. I was disappointed that Sam isn't tall and gawky, although I do like Charlie Heaton. But mainly, I was very disappointed that Roberto isn't short and dark-skinned. Yet another example of Hollywood whitewashing. There's just no excuse. So basically, Joss Boone erased everything I contributed to the way the characters look. And now, the movie has come out at last, and apparently, they've credited someone named Bob McLeod as co-creator. They couldn't even be bothered to check the spelling of my name sometime in the last 3 years. And that can't be fixed. That will be on the movie forever. I think I'm done with this movie." End quote. So his last name is spelled McLeod. They spelled it Macleod. It's just, God, ridiculous.
That what they he said about them looked having that three, up. 3 years. Three years to fix one little detail.
It's just been sitting.
COVID-19 happened. This movie's been sitting there. Everybody's been sitting at home doing their thing, working on all their projects. Nobody thought to go, that name doesn't look right. You know, no one the thought dude it. Who co-created the project that we spent years making.
Who co-created all of these characters that whose stories we're now telling. Yeah.
And it's just strange to me that they didn't just look at it and go, oh, that's a little off.
No, it's wild. I mean, I guess they could always fix it with the home release, but still, it's insane.
Yeah, but like you said, he personally will not forget it. I won't either, just because I find it, of course, it's serious, but I, in a way, also find it a little funny, because again, 3 years, come on now. Like, are you serious?
Yeah. And as far as the whitewashing that he mentions, I had to look this up because I'm not super familiar with the New Mutants outside of Magic, who's played by Anya Taylor-Joy because she's like the most famous member, and she's gone outside of the New Mutants team and been with the X-Men and been in lots of really popular storylines. But Henry Zaga portrays Roberto da Costa, aka Sunspot, in The New Mutants. While Zaga is of Brazilian descent, like the character, Sunspot is Afro-Brazilian. And in the comics, his origins touch upon anti-black racism in Brazil. And, I looked this up, I saw the original pages, because they've been circulating since this story came out. He's literally in the middle of someone committing a hate crime on him when his mutation sort of shows itself for the first time. But when asked about the character during an interview with Gizmodo on Tuesday, director Josh Boone said, quote, "I didn't care so much about the racism I've heard about in Brazil, about light-skinned versus dark-skinned. To me, it was I wanted to represent Brazil in a positive way, and I wanted to find somebody who seems like he could look like a guy who's had the silver spoon in his mouth, who has like a really rich dad, and Henry just exemplified all these things," end quote. So yes, Sunspot is sort of characterized because his dad is very wealthy. He's sort of like, from the little bit that I've read with the New Mutants, which is like the most recent run, he is, he's very cocky, he's very, very wealthy, but it's in a very comical way. He's not a jerk about it, at least in what I've read. He still cares very much for his fellow teammates, but that's just, you know, a part of his character. That's a really terrible thing to say, to just be like, I don't really care about this main story about the element.
Character's actual origin story.
Yeah, I don't really care about any of the racism that they've experienced. You know, that's, you know, a central building block of their character development. Not important.
Yeah.
That's basically what he said.
Yeah, pretty much. And also the sad part is what he describes as this character is so simple. And honestly, it's not interesting. And what they described as the origin story is something new that I haven't seen before. Something I honestly did not know about. And I would like to see that on screen. And I actually think, from the trailers I saw, that origin would have fit in well with the movie. Because they're going for a very horror-themed thing. So if he is, if, like you said, his mutation comes out when there's a hate crime happening to him.
Yeah.
So you can
basically
have... Go ahead.
Basically what he's in a football match. I shouldn't say soccer, but he's in a football match, and one of the opposing teammates who's light-skinned attacks him, and it is, I don't remember the exact dialogue, but it's because he's black that he attacks.
I feel like there is that kind of, you could have that scene and have it in a way to where, oh, that was way too brutal, or whatever it is. I don't even know what his powers are, to be honest with you. But when you go with what he said he wanted the character to be, which is, let me get this right, he wanted somebody who could look like a guy who's had a silver spoon in his mouth, who has like a really rich dad, and Henry exemplified all of these things. We have seen that character a billion times. That is a, what's his face in Stranger Things in a way? Steve. And they had, they actually flipped that on its head. We've seen this kind of character so many times. What that to me tells me is Josh Boone wanted to be lazy.
Pretty much. That's what it kind of tells me. From the trailers, what I've gathered, his origin as to when his mutation came out, I think he accidentally killed his girlfriend when they were in a pool. If I'm remembering the trailers correctly.
Yeah, you can make that horrific.
Yeah. Also, his powers, yeah, I had to look this up too. Because I wasn't really sure, even like with the brief amount of comics that I've read. He can absorb solar radiation. So solar energy, and then he uses it for various abilities. Like, it enhances like his strength and his speed and his durability and all that kind of stuff. So he sort of absorbs the energy and rechannels it to what he needs it for. But it also gives him like different kinesis like abilities. So he like has thermokinesis, so he can like project heat in intense waves, and like shoot them out of his body, which can also lead to like energy blasts. This also helps him, like, keeping that energy inside his body also provides him like sustenance so that he can survive for a long time. He's also like, yeah. With his powers, he's also completely immune to any kind of fire and heat. So if he were to do like fight any kind of other mutant who, like, you know, shoots fire, like, say, Pyro or someone, Pyro's going down because it's going to have no effect on him.
Yeah, this is the last thing I'll say about this as well. And then you can say something or we can move on to our next story. But I just now thought about this, and I thought about it being, this is supposed to be like a scary movie and with the X-Men characters. And what I just now realized were these characters. And I've seen a few reviewers also say this, but it never fully clicked. All these characters really are just like generic horror movie stereotypes. Mm-hmm. That's what they come across as. Again,
the cocky rich guy. Yeah, that's definitely a stereotype.
I will see this movie because I'm not somebody who just goes, "Oh, New Mutants completely terrible," and I'll never see it. I will watch it to form my own personal opinion. But going into it, I'm going to have a lower expectation because to me, it seems very generic now. Coming off of what he said about this character, what he wanted, what the character could have been, and honestly, the way the other characters look in the trailers. I just now, it clicked in my head going, oh my god, they seem so generic.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And then that also adds in with like what critics are saying too. It's just like, yeah, I mean, it's just really formulaic and generic. And the cast does well with the material they're given, but the material itself is just nothing special.
Yeah, when like I will see this movie, but just way low expectations.
Yeah, same here. Which is very unfortunate because I was really looking forward to a horror Marvel movie. I think that that could be done really well with the right creative talent, but apparently Josh Boone is not that. Last thing I'll say, and a lot of people I've seen point this out, is that it's just almost comical that they whitewash a character from a comic series, X-Men, which is a metaphor for racism.
Yep.
It's insane that that can just be right there and Josh Boone can be just like, no, we're going to ignore that.
That's actually very funny in a way, in a very terrible
in
way.
In a very dark, terrible way, yes. But let's move on to something way more positive. Another review roundup for Bill and Ted Face the Music. So like New Mutants, we're not going to go into every review, but we will point out one or two specific quotes and scores. Right now on Rotten Tomatoes, which obviously can be a little dicey, especially these days, because, you know, it's just bringing all of the critics' reviews together to form a percentage, but it still provides a rough gauge on what people are thinking, kind of. So right now, Bill and Ted Face the Music is sitting at 78% and 82% for the general audience. So 78% for critics. So that is way more positive than New Mutants, and honestly a little surprisingly positive for, you know, a sequel that's coming out so much later after the original movies. But we've got some quotes from some reviews right here. Collider's Matt Goldberg gave Bill and Ted 3 a B+ score. He said, "I was worried that Bill and Ted may not have the staying power, especially when we've seen comedy sequels like Zoolander 2 and Bad Santa 2 falter so badly after decades away from their beloved originals. The secret of the Bill and Ted movies is that they work out from simple characters, but then make their circumstances different enough so that it doesn't feel like a retread. Yes, Face the Music has time travel and characters going to hell, where they encounter the Grim Reaper, which is William Sadler. There are moments when the pacing gets a bit slow, and Bill and Ted fighting with their future selves gets a little redundant. But there's no mistaking Face the Music for the previous two movies, especially as it reaches its lovely crescendo about the kind of future we not only leave to our children, but that those children give to us in return. Party on, dudes." Then we have IGN's Jim Bovoda. I'm sorry. Probably mispronouncing his name. Jim Bishvoda gave the movie a 7 out of 10 rating, same as New Mutants. Interesting. "Bill and Ted Face the Music is a pleasant escape for the quarantine-stricken, a sweet and entertaining romp that defies expectations by largely recapturing what worked about the series so many years later. Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter rekindle their past chemistry almost instantly, even if their successors, Bridget Lundy Payne and Samara Weaving, aren't always quite as well served by or as comfortable with the draft material. Still, the whole ensemble cast is entertaining, and the movie itself proves a good-natured distraction from our own grim time. It should be said, though, that it's not all great for Bill and Ted Face the Music, but the overall consensus is that this movie is definitely a good time. So, I've said on the show before, I haven't seen the Bill and Ted movies. I plan on watching this because I thought it looked really funny, but I'm going to go back and watch the originals, obviously, before I watch this. But how does this suit you, Taylor? You more excited for this one? Happy to see that it's doing well?
Yeah, this one's going to be shorter because there's not a crazy controversy attached to this movie.
That is also true.
So, yeah, I'm really kind of excited for this. I didn't need any review, and I've seen some bad ones as well, but the only review I needed to see for this movie was Kevin Smith's. When I saw Kevin Smith's reaction to it and how much it affected him, and I was like, oh, okay. I'm down to see this movie. Let's go. I don't know when I'll see it, but I am really, really excited.
Oh, yeah, because he got to see it early. I think, yeah, we talked about his reaction on the show a few episodes back,
he
right?
said, I believe he said something about he was high at the time. And yeah. He went out, and his wife was there, and was like, why are you crying? So I just, or what movie were you watching? He said, yeah, I was watching Bill and Ted 3. So like, are you high? Yeah, but it was really good.
But still, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, but still. So I just love that part of it. And it's like, yeah, but still, they nailed it, regardless.
Yeah.
So I'm really pumped to see it. The trailers for it were great. I don't think it gave too much away. I hope it didn't, because there were a few good jokes in it. Another thing I hope it doesn't do is the prison thing with the feature Bill and Ted.
Oh, yeah.
Does it stay with them too long? I have a feeling it might. But hopefully not.
Yeah, we'll see. But I'm glad to see that it's doing well. Like the Collider review mentioned, we've seen like comedy sequels come back. Zoolander 2 specifically was just like trashed for being terrible. I didn't even bother seeing it. It's interesting you should bring up Kevin Smith, because he's currently, I believe, still working on Clerks 3. Not sure when that's supposed to come out. But
well, I think too in 2020 with Bill and Ted 3, like, this whole be excellent to each other and just kind of like the very simplistic but honestly easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And it's just something I think we all could do, like, period.
Not oh, yeah. No, it's
been a complete disaster. It sucked from the top
absolutely.
Down. So just that simple kind of thing I think can resonate with everybody right now. I really do. It's just this kind of family-friendly movie. To a point. family movie that's just kind of just resonates with you and has some fun with it. I think that's kind of what would help a lot of people with movies and TV shows these days, instead of seeing this dark and terrible mess or a 3 years in the making horror movie with the X-Men.
Yeah, it's a. It's a very positive message, just dressed up in a goofy package, which I appreciate. Yeah. All right, well, let's move on from there. That's it for movie news. We'll move on to some TV news. First being that a Resident Evil series is officially in the works at Netflix. They officially announced the live-action Resident Evil series the other day. The series' first season will have 8 one-hour episodes. So Andrew Dabb is writing it. He's from Supernatural. And Bronwyn Hughes, The Walking Dead, who's from The Walking Dead and The Journey is the Destination, he will direct the show's first 2 episodes. So if you're wondering what you can expect from Netflix's Resident Evil, and maybe if you're a little bit worried because of those movies being so far from the source material, we do have the synopsis here. In the first timeline, 14-year-old sisters Jade and Billy Wesker are moved to New Raccoon City, a manufactured corporate town forced on them right as adolescence is in full swing. But the more time they spend there, the more they come to realize that the town is more than it seems, and their father may be concealing dark secrets, secrets that could destroy the world. Cut to the second timeline, well over a decade into the future, there are less than 15 million people left on Earth.
That's spoilers.
Yeah.
For the first time.
And, and more than 6 billion monsters, people and animals infected with the T-virus. Jade, now 30, struggles to survive in this new world, while the secrets from her past, about her sister, her father, and herself, continue to haunt her. So, Taylor, are we excited about this?
I'm going to go into the show with an open mind. And I really will. Netflix has hit out of the park with Witcher and Umbrella Academy. So I'll go into this with an open mind. But I am not really into the show based off that synopsis. And the main reason why is, yet again, it feels like they're going away from the source material. I don't understand how difficult it would be to just do Resident Evil 1 in a movie or TV show.
Yeah, it's a very simple premise. They're stuck in a mansion and there are monsters there.
I know the dialogue is cheesy, and it really is. We have a few people at the Nerd Stash who actually love it for its cheesiness. But you can change the dialogue to whatever you want. Just don't change the characters' personalities. So I just don't understand how, for Resident Evil, it's like, no, we have to do something grand. We have to skip to the end game and the world's over. That takes out the fun of Resident Evil, at least for me. I think it's honestly a lot of people because they love the older game so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Resident Evil 7 kind of shows that as well, because it's not a large-scale, post-apocalyptic story. So it's just, I like the, we have to stop the apocalypse from happening. And this show is kind of like, no, it happens. It's all over. We're in the end game. And takes out the fun of the entire point of Resident Evil to me.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, it depends on execution. It could be interesting. Yeah,
it definitely could, especially with
it could be Wesker's
kids.
It could be interesting, like, seeing what happens and then as a viewer, like, getting to piece together while it jumps back and forth between two timelines, but I also definitely agree with you that it still sounds like it's moving away from the source material, which is a bummer because it doesn't sound as far removed from the source material that the movies were, because that was just, like,
I feel like it's more towards the movies than the actual
than the games. Yeah. It's just...
Especially since I didn't put this in the notes, but I remember reading it somewhere that they said that characters from the games will appear. And if you remember, that's what we heard about
Jill Valentine, Chris Redfield.
That's what we heard about the movies, and we got Chris and Leon, and they just weren't very good. I believe, who was it? From Prison Break... And The Flash, I can't remember his name now. Fantastic actor. He played Chris Redfield. And he's great, but I don't think he fit that role at all.
I didn't even get to Chris Redfield in the movies, I don't think. I've seen the first three Resident Evil movies. I know there's three other ones.
And Jill. Those are the only two I remember from previous games being in the movies. Yeah. So... They have low expectations to live up to. That's the good thing about this show.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very low bar that has been set, so. I agree. I still want to go into this with an open mind because Netflix, for the most part, has been doing really well with their series. They, like you said, Witcher, Umbrella Academy Season 2 was fantastic. And they've been really... really working hard to get a lot of video game properties. We talked, I think, about one episode. There's a cyberpunk anime series coming. There's also Castlevania is on there. Castlevania is, oh my god, it's so good. It's one of the best shows on Netflix. And so this could turn out incredible. Who knows?
It's just to me, I think it's such an easy story. And not just easy, like, oh, simple, generic. I kind of feel like I took another dig at New Mutants without seeing it. I didn't mean to. I just seriously mean simple and generic. But what I mean by, like, oh, it's an easy story to tell, it is also compelling. You're going into this mansion with a bunch of monsters and zombies and dogs in there. And no, it's just the claustrophobia of it.
Yeah,
I think would be so interesting to see. And you're stuck in that mansion for like 6 to 8 episodes. I think that would be fantastic.
Yeah, and even if they didn't want to do that, like there are a couple of Resident Evil games.
I think that would be another good one to do.
Yeah, there are a couple of Resident Evil games that go on at the simultaneously. Like while you have all the stuff going on. Going, yeah, you have all that stuff going on in the mansion. There's also Resident Evil Zero. God, I'm blanking on that protagonist's name at the moment, but it's
Rebecca.
Yeah, Rebecca Chambers. And she like has a cameo in the like the first Resident Evil game, but then she's like the main protagonist in Resident Evil Zero. So you get to see her side of the story and how those stories connect. So if they even wanted it to be a little bit more expansive than just stuff in the mansion, like they have more source material to draw from there. But
you can be in a train.
Exactly. Like also claustrophobic. Train to train. Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just it's simple, but it's so compelling to do for like a horror movie or TV show. And yeah. I'm just confused why these movies and TV shows aren't just going to go, well, let's do that. Take away the cheesy dialogue and put some good actors and good material in there.
And some good effects, some good zombies in there. But, yeah. We'll just have to keep an open mind. We'll see what comes of it. And, alright, let's move on. Next TV story. A live-action Powerpuff Girls series is in development at the CW. So this comes from Variety. The classic Cartoon Network series, which ran from 1998 to 2005, is getting rebooted for live action. New show comes from creators Diablo Cody, who she, of course, won an Oscar for writing Juno. She also wrote Jennifer's Body. And Heather Regnier, who is a producer on the Hulu Veronica Mars revival, as well as some other CW shows like Sleepy Hollow. Also coming from executive producer Greg Berlanti, who has been working with CW for a long time on the Arrowverse shows, as well as Riverdale and a ton of other stuff. The reboot will follow the heroes as disillusioned 20-somethings who resent having lost their childhood to crime fighting and must face the decision of reuniting when the world needs them again. So, Taylor, did you watch Powerpuff Girls at all when you were a kid?
Powerpuff Girls is a lot like Backstreet Boys to me, in the sense of back when we were in high school, middle school, like growing up, it would be not cool to say you liked it.
But like, fair enough.
So much time has passed that I think more and more people are like, yeah, Powerpuff Girls is pretty good. Yeah, as a kid, it was pretty decent show. It really was.
Yeah.
I actually was so set up to be like, not for me, I'm going to pull the Rocko's Modern Life and be like, maybe a new generation can like this show. New generation of kids. And then I did not know about the synopsis. They just pulled an Umbrella Academy there. I did not expect it.
Yeah. It's... I don't know. I always thought that for some reason, the Powerpuff Girls just would not age because of how they were created.
Yeah.
So just to hear this synopsis, I'm just like, that's just kind of...
I'm going to be honest strange, with you. Kind of strange I did me. Not read this part of the... We have like little write-ups, by the way, people. To where we kind of go on here, then we click a link and read more about these stories, so we're kind of informed and we know what we're talking about. This was the one that I actually forgot was there. So as Johnny was saying it, I'm just like, oh, okay, I forgot this story was here, and wait, this is going to follow the heroes as disillusioned 20-somethings who resent losing their childhood. And I'm like, wow, that's not what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel
about it. Probably still won't watch it, but at the same time, that is more interesting. I'll give them that.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that synopsis, if I'm being honest. I know the tendency, or at least for me and for maybe a lot of people, to hear like when something is getting like a gritty, like adult themed reboot, it's just kind of like to roll your eyes or groan. And I kind of reacted the same way when I heard this. I think Diablo Cody is what really draws me to this. I think she's a great writer. I only recently watched Jennifer's Body.
That's why I was going to mention this, because
totally underrated. Yeah, totally underrated movie. It's honestly hilarious, and it's just a ton of fun, ton of campy fun. I liked it a lot. So that's what draws me in a little bit.
What puts me off to this show,
yeah,
and this is coming from somebody who's a huge fan of the Arrowverse. I love the Flash TV show. Legends of Tomorrow is a must-watch for anybody.
Yeah, this is why I wanted to get your opinion, since he is working on it.
And Arrow is amazing. One of the best series finales I've seen in a long time. All that said... All those great things said, the CW, I have major problems with the way they do content. with forced drama. Everybody looks way too good. It's so unrealistic. And just, I call them CW-isms with the right. forced drama. And it'll be a storyline happening that you know is there just to eat up screen time. There's no purpose of it really in the story. It'll get resolved in 5 episodes. And this show is going to suffer from it terribly. I can already tell.
Just based off the synopsis.
Just based off the synopsis too. And where it's at worries me.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate because I did really enjoy Powerpuff Girls. And you're right. It is one of those things that was just like, at least for young boys to admit that it was cool is just kind of lame. But it was a really, really great show. I liked the characters. I thought it was really, really funny. Animation style was like similar to Dexter's Lab, which I also really loved because Genndy Tartakovsky, who created Dexter's Lab, he directed a lot of Powerpuff Girls as well. So I thought it was a really funny show, but this this doesn't really do it for me.
If I'm being now, honest. Again, but, maybe we're old people who are just like, again, I'm going to pull the rock as Modern Life because I love that scene so much of him kind yeah. of like, maybe it's for, not for us, not for
yeah.
us to like or us to reluctantly, secretly like back when we were kids and stuff. And maybe yeah. it's for a new generation. And that's awesome. And that's what ends up being the case. It's just, for me, I do see yeah. that network it's going to. I see the synopsis and I see yeah. the show, and it's just a mix that I don't think is going to work.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, look, Riverdale is really popular, and that's like a more adult-themed version of Archie comics. But a lot of people really enjoy it, so who am I to say?
Archie punches a bear. That's the one thing really? I know about that show. Something about it punching a bear. There was a speakeasy. I get my Riverdale content from when I watch the Arrowverse shows and they show the commercials, and the commercials for Riverdale are so insane. I mean, dude, they're just, there's so much crazy stuff happening, and I'm like, what is this show? Aren't they supposed to be in high school? Like, what?
They are, from what I know. Anyway, let's move on to our last bit of news. A little bit of a bummer if you like Altered Carbon, because Netflix just canceled it after 2 seasons. So, per Nelly Andreeva of Deadline, Netflix has pulled the plug on Altered Carbon. According to Andreeva, this decision was apparently not COVID-related. And here's a quote from the Deadline report. I hear Netflix's decision not to proceed with further seasons was made in April and is not COVID-related, but stems from the streamer's standard viewership versus cost renewal review process. Netflix recently canceled 2 previously renewed series, The Society and I Am Not Okay With This, citing COVID-related circumstances. So, I have never seen Altered Carbon, but Taylor, do you have any thoughts on this series' abrupt end?
From what I kind of gather from reading a few things, is it kind of seems like this report, it cost too much money. Didn't get enough yeah. viewership to warrant it. And that's unfortunate because I remember season 1 coming out and everybody loved it. It was the new hot show out there. It was so crazy, so cyberpunk new. And then we kind of just waited a long time, didn't hear anything. Anthony Mackie came in to play the lead. Johnny, it's a long story, but he's playing the same character as season 1.
Yeah, I know the nature of the main character is that he changes his appearance a lot. I don't know how or why. Which is unique.
It's actually pretty yeah. cool, but to me, I think this show really suffered from it taking way too long to come yeah. back. And I think it lost its viewers. Because you guys think all these great shows that have come out since then, I think a lot of people, including myself, just went, I have a lot to watch right now. I could go watch yeah. The Boys instead. I still haven't seen season 2 of Altered Carbon, and I'm not sure I ever will, just because I don't remember season 1. It's been that long.
Well, and now with it, you know that what if it ends on like a huge cliffhanger, and you know there's going to be no resolution.
I knew that was Santa Clarita that died it, and I just watched it anyways, and I regret it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Unfortunate for fans of Altered Carbon, and obviously the cast and the production that are working
almost
on
definitely.
It.
But, it always sucks to see yeah. a crew, a lot of people lose their jobs over things, even if you don't think the show has really panned out, or it's lost its luster, or whatever. Still people losing their jobs, especially right yeah. now. It sucks.
Oh, it definitely does. very unfortunate. I'm always curious, because we never know how well a show is doing. Like, the Deadline report says that it stems from the streamer's standard viewership versus cost renewal review process. But we never know how well these shows are doing in terms of viewership. Because, like, I've that been invested...
somewhat come
I've been,
out. But not, like, full numbers. Like, remember Umbrella Academy came out, and it was, like, The Flash was one of the top series streamed on Netflix.
Yeah.
And Umbrella Academy Season 1 beat that. I remember that story. It's just not as much as other networks, it seems like. It's not as publicized, I guess.
Oh, yeah. They always like to brag when something is doing, like, super well, like Umbrella Academy, or, like, when The Boys Season 1 came out, Amazon was just like, this is the most watched show that we've ever had. So they're always, like, bragging when it's doing really well, but there's never any chance for any kind of, like, fans to rally behind a show that they enjoy, because no one knows if it's doing well. I mean, Netflix has started doing their whole top 10 thing, which is helpful and useful to see, like, what things are doing really well.
There's no situation like, for example, I believe CBS with Jericho. I think it was CBS.
Yeah.
I don't remember if you, or don't know if you watched Jericho, Johnny, but it was a great show. It didn't get a second season at first. People actually sent in nuts to the executives. And there's a story reason behind that if you get to the end of the first season.
Mm-hmm.
But all that outcry kind of gave them, like, okay, we'll give you 6 episodes to wrap up the show. So people leave us the hell alone.
Yeah.
And it feels like these days there's not as much of that.
No,
not, not. If your show gets canceled, you're kind of screwed. There's not much of that. We're going to bring it back. Even if it gets canceled, it's like, other networks are looking at it. It never gets picked up.
Well, I mean, sometimes. I mean, Netflix has picked up shows that have been canceled, like Lucifer, for example.
Yeah, those are
it's just rare that that would happen. Yeah, but I mean, it just always sucks because I've been invested in Netflix shows before, and I have had friends that have watched it, and I've just been like, hey, this show is really great, and it seemed like it was doing well, and then Netflix is just like, nope, canceled. It's just a bummer to always hear.
No, it's not doing great. Well, put out something else. Hey, you'll get invested in it for 2 seasons.
Yeah. Very unfortunate. All right. That's all the news we have, so let's move on towards the end of the show with what we are working on and where people can find us. Taylor, why don't you go first?
I'm not working on too much at the moment. Like I said, I have a few reviews going out here shortly. I'm probably playing Madden and reviewing that, so that should be fun. You can find me at RamboFactor on Twitter. I've been more active as of late. I've been actually online more, just trying to just put some thoughts out there on some dumb entertainment news, hopefully make a joke or two that everybody likes.
Nice. As for myself, I recently had my review for Spiritfarer go up on the Nerd Stash, which is one of the best games of 2020. Thank you.
I didn't get a chance. I wasn't on the Nerd Stash show this week.
Oh, yeah.
Or last week. I'm not sure how that really works with when we record these things and then we put them out in separate weeks. But I wasn't on the last Nerd Stash show. I didn't get to share my thoughts on how great that game is. I thought your review was very good.
I really dived into
how good the writing was.
Oh, yeah. I love the characters and the writing of that game so much. In my review, I only talk about the first 2 spirits that you get in that game, but I wanted to talk about, like, so much more. Like, I wanted to go into detail about what I love about each of the characters, but then, you know, that review would have been, like, so, so ridiculously long and rambling, but, like, I love the characters in that game, the art style, the music, like, it's just so, so good. So yeah, that review is up on the Nerd Stash if you'd like to hear more in-depth thoughts. You can hear me on the most recent episode of the Nerd Stash show. We were talking about opening night live of Gamescom, so that was a fun one to record. I should finally be having some more Watch Mojo videos posted this coming month, unless they get pushed back. The next one is scheduled for Friday the 4th on Mojo Plays, and it's the 9 most brutal weapons in video games. And You can find me on Twitter at @avatar_Johnny. But that wraps up another episode of Nerds Talk Movies. Remember to follow us on Twitter at @NerdStashShow. Hang out with us on Discord at the NerdStash Community. And please visit the site. We have lots of great writers there. Please subscribe to this podcast on whatever your platform of choice is. We are basically on every single one. Thank you, Taylor, for joining me. And thank you all for listening. Our story of the week today proves that you never know what people are battling with, yep, what they are keeping secret. So please just be kind to one another. Keep those that you love around you close at all times, and take care.